Sign on, dear listeners. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, and the clock says it's time for this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and I welcome you to the show of questions and answers. Swami's message is like a well filled with sweet and life-giving water. But unlike a spring, the well does not give out water on its own. You need to fetch the water with a pail. And that pail is the question that nags us. Well, the rope is our patience and perseverance, and it better be long enough. The pulley is our shraddha or earnestness. And the act of pulling is the self-effort or the process of mananam. When all of this comes together, we can draw out the water, and there is enough water to quench our thirst and much more than that too. But before all that, we must be grateful that we have after all found the well in the first place. Found the well in the middle of this vast desert, and if I could say so, in the midst of so many fake or dry wells. So that is where we must begin, right? By offering our most loving and grateful pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. He is the wisdom, He is the solace and source, the dear friend and destination, and of course, our beloved Swami. I'm sure by now you would have heard enough about it, but let me also say it. Chitravati is flowing, and we cannot tell you how happy that makes us all in Puttaparthi. And almost everyone whom I come across speaking about it says only one thing. It spontaneously takes us back to those days when Swami would spend hours and hours on the banks of the river with devotees. What we fondly and with a fair bit of envy call the Chitravati sessions. The beautiful times when Swami would perform some amazing leelas in the sands of River Chitravati. Talking about which, maybe I can share another exciting news. Those of you who watched our video series on Swami's childhood, Satya to Sai, and who have been asking us so many times when they will get to see the next part of it, well, here is the good news. It's coming very soon, and we are super excited about it. For we are hoping that you all will enjoy it as much as you enjoyed the first season of this series, and as much as we enjoyed preparing it for you. But I will still not tell you when it is going to start, but certainly it's not going to be too long. Let's head then to the program of this week. We have a simple question today. I say simple because my answer is not going to be too philosophical or technical like the past couple of weeks at least. But nevertheless, it is about an important topic for spiritual aspirants. But we will get to that when we get to that. Right now it's time for the quote of the week. And this week's quote is actually a couplet, and it is from a devotee saint I am very fond of, and so I believe many of you must be too. It is the 17th century saint, Sant Tukaram, a great devotee of Lord Vithala and one who belongs to the famous Varkari tradition of Maharashtra. And here is the translation of few of the lines written by him originally in Marathi. I quote, "When salt is dissolved in water, what is it that remains distinct? I have thus become one in joy with thee and have lost myself in thee. When fire and camphor are brought together, is there any black remnant left? Tuka says, thou and I are one light." End of quote. One of the most beautiful ways of describing the journey of a devotee is to call it an attempt of a salt doll to fathom the depth of the ocean. The process will only have one certain end, the salt doll loosing itself to the ocean. And this is the beauty of the bhakti tradition itself, be it Tukaram or Sant Kabir or the many Sufi saints who have lived in our midst. They loved the Lord like another, like a master, a mother, friend and God. But they always knew that the idea was to put an end to the basis of that separation itself, the state of individuality. And certainly, this path is far sweeter than any other, for the journey itself is sweet. It is not my idea to pass judgment on any of the other paths, yet in this path of devotion, The progress is seen as losing oneself slowly, surrendering more and more. And we know every time we have a problem, and let's say we throw our hands up and say, I give up, Swami, you take care, how free we feel. In the path of devotion, every step forward is such freedom that we can feel. But in the other paths, it is about taking more and more control over oneself, one's thoughts, one's actions, a path which is difficult, and may I say, filled with pitfalls. My colleague Sai Prakash often shares this very endearing episode when they had invited Swami for an exhibition that they had set up when they were in school. And they had made this one particular model about the three pathways to God. There was a bullock cart for the Karma Marga, a car for Bhakti Marga, and an aeroplane for Jnana Marga. Swami looked at it and asked, what is this? The little boys explained how the Jnana Marga is like an aeroplane ride and can get the aspirant to the destination quickest. Swami smiled and said, well, that may be true, but remember, falling from a cart or car is okay. If one falls from a plane, it is most fatal. As Swami would say, if the path of bhakti is submitting saying dasoham, the path of jnana is asserting saying soham, I am God. If one is diminishing the ego to escape the chain, the other is growing it so big that the shackles cannot bind it anymore. And we all know the troubles an oversized ego can cause. So a slip in the path of jnana can be very, very dangerous. But in the path of devotion, the goal is the same oneness, but the journey is safer and, more importantly, sweeter. As Tukaram says, Lord, I love you so much, I enjoy every moment I spend with you. How much more blissful I can if I can spend all my time with you. And that can be only if I merge in you like a salt and water. And that is what happens through his devotion. He feels that oneness. He feels that he is like that salt that is dissolved in water. But truly speaking, bhakti, jnana and karma are inseparable, isn't it? It is like a river flowing towards the ocean. The yearning of the river to reach the ocean is bhakti. Yearning alone is not enough. It has to take the arduous journey, labor through plains, cliffs and valleys. That journey is karma. And after all this, if it does not merge in the ocean, it is pointless. That merger, that losing of the identity, that it is a river and it becoming one with the ocean is jnana. So dear listeners, before we head to the question this week, permit me to read that quote by Sant Tukaram one more time. I quote, when salt is dissolved in water, what is it that remains distinct? I have thus become one in joy with thee and have lost myself in thee. When fire and camphor are brought together, is there any black remnant left? Tukar says, thou and I are one light. Without much ado, let's move to the question of this week, dear listeners. The question is from a person who has sent us quite a few questions before this. It's from Sister Prashanti from the United States. And as always, she's recorded her question and sent it to us. We listen to it. As I said, it's a fairly simple question, so it appears. But I think it's going to give us an opportunity to talk about something which Swami has emphasized many times. So first, let's listen to the question that Prashanti wishes us to address on this show.
Sai Ram Prem, happy morning, Thursday morning to Radio Sai team and all the listeners all across the world who are basking in Swami's love through Radio Sai. Wanted to ask a question today in relation to the response you gave to Sister Vidya recently. She's a student, I guess, and when she asked about what do we do when we want to achieve goals and we keep making mistakes, something relating to that, you gave an answer which had an example about waking up early in the morning. that made me think of the problem which I am facing. I always hear from Sai devotees and students that Swami has insisted on doing Omkaram, Suprabhatam and Sai Ashtotram, how important they are, and especially the benefits of doing them during Brahma Muhurtam. And actually, I really enjoy doing them, but I'm not able to do them during that period of time. But there is definitely a significance of doing it before 6 a.m. in the morning. And I just fail to do that every time I try. It's like a day and it's not happening. So is it like very time bound? Like, what did Swami have to say? Why did he keep this in the routine of students? If you could go over some points from Swami's messages, it might motivate me to at least try once more and keep trying doing this again. What did Swami have to say about benefits of Omkaram, Suprabhatam, Sai Gayatri, Sai Ashtotram, and the benefits of doing them? Is it that you have to do it only during that time of the day and you cannot do it during any other time? Kind of questions I had. If you could say anything about this, it would really benefit me, and I really, really want to make it a habit, do it some days, and make sure that I continue it for the rest of my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Prashanti, for that question. Well, if I can summarize that whole question in one line, well, what is the significance of early morning prayers, right? That's precisely what she's asking. The Omkarams, the Suprabhatam, the Ashtotram, and what has Swami said about these practices? Do they have to be performed only early in the morning? Well, before I start the answer, as they say in journalism and as they say in business, here comes a full disclosure. I don't do Suprabhatam early in the morning. It's not a part of my practice, though we all followed it very, very scrupulously when in hostel. Not all of us continue that even after we've left Swami's hostel. So that's a full disclosure, because I don't want people to believe that I'm here talking in the capacity of someone who practices this. Like many others, I probably don't connect to Swami through these particular prayers, so I don't find it an apt way of doing this in the morning, but I'll come to that eventually. But that is what it is, so I'm just making that very clear. It's not that we all here in Radio Sai follow all of this, and so we have the authority to speak about this. As I've said many times before here on this program, we try to share with you what Swami has said, and we would like all of you to take it with that worth. You know, these are Swami's instructions. Please don't look at whether the people who are speaking are really practicing that. Yes, that is our part of the journey. It would be inappropriate for me to speak on things which I do not follow myself. So that's my part of the sadhana. But for all of you, I think what you'll have to see is, if Swami is giving importance to that, is it resonating with you? If you feel that is how you need to connect to Swami, I think you'll have to take it forward from there. It's not about whether the others are following it or somebody like me who's speaking on the program is following it. Going back to the history of Suprabhatam, and you know, because one of the reasons why we feel that we need to follow these practices is it's a part of the ashram schedule, and we generally try to carry forward whatever we have come and experienced in the ashram when we go back home. So a little bit of history of how this whole thing started. How did we start having Suprabhatam and things like that? Interestingly, initially in the Pathamandiram days, in the late 1940s, and probably even in the early 1950s after Swami moved to the Prashantinilayam ashram, the ashram did not have a very, very strict schedule in that sense of the Omkarams in the morning or Nagar Sankirtan, all of these things. In fact, that was disappointing to many of the devotees who came in those early years, because a lot of devotees who came to Swami in the 1940s and 1950s, apart from being drawn by Swami's miracles and the leelas which Swami performed, many of them were really spiritual aspirants who heard about Swami, who heard of Swami being a great master, and they wanted to spend some time around Swami. So in that sense, when they came to Swami as spiritual aspirants, they were a bit disappointed, because in those times, most often you ended up comparing the ashram in Puttaparthi with the ashrams outside, and say that, you know, these ashrams follow these schedules, and there would be a lot of people, disciples of great Swamiji's and Mahatmas would come to Swami's presence, and they would say that, you know, we follow all of these in our ashrams, and we don't get to see such traditions here. So a lot of devotees would walk up to Swami and say, Swami, why aren't there any such schedules in Swami's ashram? And one thing which Swami would say is, which is very important for us to remember, Swami would say that, why do you need all of that when I am here? Right? When I myself am here and you all are, you know, all the time with me, you're all the time doing things for me, you're singing bhajans for me, you're cooking for me, you're moving around with me. As I said, they would spend a good part of the day in the sands of Chitravati. They would go late into the night and they would dine with Swami. They would sleep around Swami. Swami would sleep in the courtyard and all the devotees would sleep around Swami. So Swami would say, what is the necessity for these kinds of sadhana when I myself am here? Right? This was Swami's reply. But slowly, more and more people started becoming permanent residents in the ashram, especially after Swami moved to Prashantanilayam, where a few rooms came around Swami. There were a lot of permanent residents. The number of blocks started growing, East Prashanti and South Prashanti. So a lot of permanent residents started, the number of permanent residents in Prashantanilayam started increasing gradually. So when this happened, and you know that the early years, Swami used to travel a lot. And even much later, even in the 60s and 70s, Swami would travel extensively, and Swami would be away for many weeks at a stretch from Puttaparthi. So when that happened, Swami wanted a certain schedule to be followed in the ashram so that the people would remain focused. So literally, if you look at this schedule in the ashram, it has been made. One thing is, of course, to lead a disciplined life is very essential for spirituality. Swami has said it on multiple occasions. There is no denying that. But comparing what Swami said to the devotees who went up to Swami and complained that there were not enough attributes to the schedule in Prashantanilayam for a spiritual aspirant, and Swami saying that you don't need it because I am here. And the later years when Swami started introducing the schedules, because Swami was traveling a lot and Swami wanted the people in the ashram to remain focused. So literally, these morning schedules or any of the schedules through the day which was made, Swami created it and made it part of the schedule so that in the absence of Swami's physical presence, the devotees living here can remain focused. So I think that is a clue for all of us. So if we are coming to the ashram, living here for some time and going away, it becomes so much more difficult to focus our minds on Swami. As Swami said, if Swami is around and if you are getting to spend the entire day with Swami, of course you don't have to worry about how to keep your mind focused on Swami, because it's a given. It automatically, Swami is drawing your attention throughout the day. But the more we get into our worldly activities, more we get into our regular schedules when we go back home, when it becomes more and more difficult to lead a life focused on Swami, these early morning schedules actually play a very important role. So that was why Swami set it up in the ashram, and that's probably the reason why we all must try to follow it when we go back, right? And in many, many ways, you know, after putting the schedule, Swami very beautifully and very sweetly, Swami would encourage people to follow these practices of, you know, morning suprabhatam or the omkaram. In fact, even before the university came up and even before the students of the college and schools came up, you know, there was the Veda Pathshala, right? And the Veda Pathshala, I think if I'm not wrong, the first batch was about 12 students. And even for the next few years, it was numbers of, you know, that quantity of pretty small numbers. And their schedule was literally given by Swami, and not only given by Swami, enforced by Swami. Swami would check if they are following it. And one of the things which they had to do was, of course, the morning Omkaram and Suprabhatam. And after that, they had to participate in the Veda Parayanam, which happens before the Nagar Sankirtan. And after that, they would, I think, do about 3 or 8 or 9, I'm not sure the number, pradakshinas around the mandir. And when they would do that, it would be early in the morning, pretty dark. Apparently, Swami would be sitting at the window and counting the number of boys and checking if all of them are there and all of them are following that schedule. And if anybody is missing, Swami would pull them up during the darshan and say that, yeah, I didn't see you in the morning, what were you doing? And, you know, is something wrong with your health, or are you becoming indisciplined? So in his own sweet way, Swami had literally made this a part of our schedule. In fact, once when we were talking to one of the teachers of the Anantapur campus, she was sharing this very beautiful incident. I think there are a few insights we can draw from this incident too, where they had, I think it was during one of the vacations, and Swami had given a few rooms in the other side of the Vrindavan Ashram. If you're aware, you know where Swami's bungalow is, right now where Thrai Vrindavan is. On the other side, there are a few rooms and a few cottages which Swami would give to some devotees who would come and stay there. So Swami had given a few rooms to these Anantapur teachers and a few students who wanted to spend their summer with Swami. So they were all staying there. And one morning, Swami came out for darshan, and I think the first morning after Swami had given him their room, Swami came out in the morning and Swami looked at all of these teachers and students, and with a very cross expression, Swami said, "Hey, why didn't I hear Suprabhatam this morning? You know, I got up at 4 in the morning, I got ready and I had my bath and I was sitting waiting that you will all sing the Suprabhatam, and you never sang." And these people were so surprised to hear Swami say this. And in a very innocently, they looked at Swami and said, "Swami, do you listen to the Suprabhatam every day that we chant?" And Swami said, "Of course I do. And in fact, I'm ready by then. I'm already ready and I'm waiting to listen to your Suprabhatam. And I couldn't hear it today. That's why I'm surprised." So they went back, and the next day, very religiously, they woke up and they did the Suprabhatam. And the following morning, Swami comes with a bright smile and Swami says, "Yeah, today I could hear you singing the Suprabhatam." And you know, there are many, many such incidents where Swami encouraged. In fact, if we speak to some of the students in the hostel, there are many, many experiences relating to Suprabhatam. In fact, when Swami is the Arts and Science College in Vrindavan came, many times Swami would make surprise visits just after Suprabhatam to the hostel. Can you imagine that? 5:30, 5:45, early in the morning, Swami would suddenly walk into the dormitory to check if the boys have all gone for Suprabhatam and they've come back and they're getting ready to, you know, either study or go for their jogging. So in many ways, in small incidents, Swami encouraged, and Swami made it very clear that this is a schedule that Swami likes if you follow, right? Swami likes it if it is followed. You know, the key is literally these disciplines, especially the early morning Omkaram and Suprabhatam, was put in place by Swami. And as I said, for the times when physically Swami is away, or in other words, when it is more difficult to lead a life centered and focused on Swami, Swami has given these practices of early morning Omkaram and Suprabhatam. The other point is, from that incident that I narrated, clearly, Swami is awake much, much before we could even chant Suprabhatam. And we all know that Suprabhatam is waking up the Lord. When Swami is sleeping and you wake up Swami by singing these, you sing these verses so that you wake up the Lord, you greet him good morning in that sense. But Swami is here waking up at 4 o'clock and getting ready. In fact, you know, how considerate Swami used to be. Sometimes in Vrindavan during the winter months, we used to have Suprabhatam a little later, in fact 15-20 minutes later than it happens in Prashanta Nilayam, because Swami would say that Vrindavan, you know, winters are much colder than in Parthi, so and let the boys not be inconvenienced, let them wake up a little later. And you know, Swami would get ready, have bath and be ready by 4 o'clock to listen to Suprabhatam, but Swami never insisted that we should have our bath and come for Suprabhatam. In fact, Swami would clearly tell this. On many occasions, Swami has said this to students, that you don't have to bother taking a bath in the morning. Just freshen up, brush your teeth, wash your face, and come and sit for Suprabhatam. Because the schedule in the hostel was such that after the Suprabhatam, we had to go out for our jogging and games. So there was no point in having a bath before that. So Swami had said, it's all right, you know, you just brush your teeth and come and do Suprabhatam. And that's how considerate Swami was. So going by all of this, you know, the idea of having a prayer of Suprabhatam, even though Swami was completely and well awake and ready by then, I think even when, given Swami sleeps, we all know that Swami never sleeps. That's what Swami would say, and that has actually been the experience of some boys who have stayed in Swami's room. They have found that Swami is awake most of the time. So given that Swami never sleeps, and even if he does, he's awake much before we could sing these verses of good morning or Suprabhatam for Swami, I think it goes without saying that the discipline of doing Suprabhatam will make us do prayers in that early morning hour. So the idea of chanting Suprabhatam was not necessarily to wake up Lord, but if it is Suprabhatam, if it has to be a waking up of Swami, I think by default we will do it early in the morning, so it becomes an early morning prayer. And I think that is what makes that Suprabhatam special, because it is not a prayer which you can do in any other time of the day. If it was any other japam or any other verse that you wake up and chant, we probably might finish it before we go to sleep the next day. You know, that's how we keep. I need to finish these many number of japams and I will do it whenever I get time in the day. The idea of creating a prayer like the Suprabhatam and saying that, you know, you should chant this, and but Swami is awake much before that, I think is so that we will take up this prayer and do it in the early morning hours. And I think the speciality is about doing it in the early morning time, which we'll come to. About the Omkar, and probably before that I'll just give you a little sketch of what is the schedule in the mornings, right? We start with the 21 Omkarams. I think in the hostel that's what we used to do, and that's what happens in the ashram too. The 21 Omkarams, the Suprabhatam, the Satya Sai Suprabhatam, which has been specially composed by a devotee of Swami. I think his name is Tirumalachar. And talking of Chitravati, he actually sat in the sands of Chitravati and he composed this in the early morning hours. And, you know, it's a beautiful description of what all happens in Prashanti Nilayam, of how the women folk wake up early in the morning and prepare rangolis and, you know, getting ready for Swami's darshan, saying that devotees are ready and devotees are eagerly waiting for Swami's darshan. So it's a beautiful description of whatever happens in Parthi early in the morning as we all wait for Swami. So that is the Satya Sai Suprabhatam, which is chanted. And we follow that with a little bit of silent sitting. And of course, we chant the Gayatri Mantra. About the importance of Omkaram, it's a huge topic by itself. Why is Omkaram important, even as a spiritual concept? What is the importance of the Pranava Mantra? I think Swami has spoken extensively about it. I think I'll not go into that today. Maybe it's a topic for another day, or maybe it's a topic for a satsang discussion. We'll leave it for later, or maybe I'll take it up on this program itself some other time, because Swami has spoken extensively about it, and it's a very, very scientific concept. It's about the importance of that sound. But Swami has also explained why that 21 times we chant the Omkaram. That is a very important thing. In fact, Swami has spoken more about Omkaram than he has spoken about Suprabhatam and Ashtotram. I think I can say that with a little bit of certainty, because that's how important Omkaram is. And Swami, during one of the, I think, Balvikas conferences, explained why Swami says that the Omkaram has to be chanted 21 times. Where Swami had said, the Jivatma or the individual is like a person riding a 20-headed horse. And the 20 heads of the horse being the 5 Karmendriyas, the 5 Jnanendriyas, the 5 Pranas, and the 5 Koshas. And that is why Swami says that we have to chant it 21 times. It is like this entity, which is a man sitting on a 20-headed horse, right? A person sitting on a 20-headed horse. And that is why when you chant 21 times Om, you are energizing and revitalizing each of these aspects, which together constitute this human experience that we are living, right? And as I said, that is why Swami explains, in fact, many examples Swami gives about Omkaram. Swami says Omkaram is God's phone number, and that is how you connect to Swami, and Swami will listen to you if you chant Omkaram. And that is why even before singing bhajans, we chant Omkaram 3 times, because that is like dialing God's number. And any number of examples Swami has given, as I said, we'll not go into that today. But this is the schedule, that 21 Omkarams followed by Suprabhatam, a bit of silent sitting, and the Gayatri Mantra. And again, the Gayatri Mantra, Swami has spoken extensively. Especially the Gayatri Mantra is meant for this time of the day. As they say, it is for Sandhya worship. And the word Sandhya itself means the twilight, which means we all know that there are 2 twilights in a day, the early morning, the dawn, and the dusk. And this mantra, the Gayatri Mantra, is meant to be chanted during these times when there is half light and half darkness, right? So these are the things that we do. So as I said, the idea of making us practice a prayer like the Suprabhatam and saying that you all should follow Suprabhatam. I think the idea itself is, this is an early morning prayer. It makes no point to get up in the afternoon and chant it. In fact, I mean, it's each individual's discipline. In fact, there is one of our teachers, a very, very inspiring teacher in the school hostel, who holds the chanting of the Suprabhatam very, very dear, and he does not eat breakfast till he has chanted the Suprabhatam at least once. You know, that is the discipline he follows. And I'm saying this because there were times when he was doing research and he had to do, stay late night in the lab, or he's part of the music group, so they would have these late night practices, sometimes going well into early in the morning. So after all this, he would come and sleep, probably during the Suprabhatam time. So when he would wake up, however late he wakes up, he will not go and have his breakfast unless he has done the Suprabhatam. I think that is a beautiful way by which he was sticking to this discipline. But otherwise, the idea of promoting a prayer like Suprabhatam itself is so that it can be done early in the morning. And the idea behind that is doing prayers early in the morning is very, very important. There are plenty of explanations Swami must have given, but for the sake of this week's program, I'm going to stick to two explanations which are very important for us. And both of these explanations are explanations that Swami has given students on multiple occasions, and Swami would explain that this is why the hostel schedule is the way it is. In fact, we had done a couple of afternoon satsangs on the importance of the hostel schedule that Swami has set for students. Maybe you can go and listen to that if you haven't listened to it already. But here we'll stick to the early morning prayers. Swami says this very, very clearly, that the entire day that we spend, the 24 hours, can be broken up into four parts depending on the guna or the attribute that they stand for. And we know that the gunas are three: sattva, rajas and tamas. Sattva being the pure guna, the rajas is the guna which pertains to activity or action, and tamas is the guna which is pertaining to laziness or sloth or a little bit of slowing down, right? Again, this is a huge topic in itself, the gunas, and I have a question which is based on this coming up probably in a few weeks. I'll probably go into that in detail when we are answering that question. But this fundamental division of a day, I think, is something which is very, very important, because the three gunas are basic to creation itself. If we go back to how Lord created creation, in fact, it is mentioned in the Vedas that it was created using these three gunas. So these three gunas are fundamental to creation itself. So when Swami is saying that the day is separated into three gunas, I think we can accept it. We may or may not be able to prove it scientifically, but I think if Swami says it, there is a fair amount of, we don't have to look beyond that. This is definitely how the day is separated. And Swami says that the early morning 4 to around 8 in the morning is a sattvic time. The morning 8 to evening 4 is the rajasic time. Evening 4 to night 8 p.m. is again sattvic time. And 8 p.m. in the night to early morning 4, it is tamasic time. So this is based on the nature of the day, and based on the nature of the different activities that we perform, again, they can also be categorized as predominantly sattvic, predominantly rajasic or tamasic. And of course, it all also matters with what attitude which we do. So, you know, the three gunas play in different levels. It plays in the physical level, it plays in the subtle level, it plays in the most subtle level too. But we know that most activities can be divided as sattva, rajas, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic too. So the idea is that when an activity is done in the time which is pertaining to its nature, to its attribute, that is the time when you will get best purchase for that activity. So Swami says that when you want to sleep, sleeping is a tamasic activity. And again, the point to be remembered is, it is not that any one of this is bad or unnecessary. Swami always says that there should be a balance between the three gunas. So when you say that sleep represents tamasic, it does not mean sleep is bad. Sleep is also an essential activity that we perform. But Swami says that you will get best out of that activity of sleep if it is performed in a time which is meant for tamasic activities. And Swami says that is from 8 to 4 in the morning. So that is the time which has to be given to sleep. And Swami says that morning time, the 12 hours from 8 in the morning to 4, is the time the body is prepared for activity. So all the work that we do, all the work which we do in the office, at home, and all of that falls in this category of rajasic activity or rigorous activity. And that is best performed during this part of the day, between 8 in the morning and 4 p.m. in the evening. Now these two times, 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the morning, and again 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., which again, as I said, refers to the time period which we refer to as sandhya, where the light, either the dawn happens or the dusk happens. Swami says that these two times, these two 4-hour slots are sattvic times, and when we indulge in sattvic activities, especially spiritual activities or activities which help us grow spiritually, are best performed in this time of the day. And even between these two times, Swami says that morning time is even more special for a couple of reasons. One of the things is that is the time which we refer to as the Brahma Muhurtam, right? Again, Brahma Muhurtam is about 1.5 hours. I think it's about maybe sometime 4:30 or roundabouts to about 6 o'clock, around that time. So that is the Brahma Muhurtam time, and because that also coincides with the sattvic time, that morning time between 4 to 8 is most suitable for doing any kind of spiritual activity. And in fact, this is again proved scientifically too, that especially when we wake up in the morning, again we've had the opportunity to speak about this on other programs, the importance of sleep. Scientifically, more and more people are coming up with findings saying that how important sleep is for the brain, because that is the time a lot of sorting out happens in the brain. Especially we have these sayings like, you know, sleep over a problem, or you'll find a solution when you wake up from a good sleep. All that is because your mind sorts out the information which it has gathered through the day when we are sleeping. You know, that activity is happening even when we are asleep. That's why when we wake up in the morning, sometimes we can think more clearly. So Swami would say, in fact, when I was speaking to students, Swami would say that even if you use 1 hour between that 4 to 8 in the morning for studying, that would give you maximum benefit. Swami would say that 1.5 hours studying in the morning is much better than probably studying 3-4 hours in any other time of the day, especially late in the night, which is a habit which most of us have. So Swami would say that early morning studying is so very important because the mind is so fresh, the memory is so receptive, it can retain more. And that goes with anything that you have to do with your mind, anything that you need your creative abilities for. That's why even you would see that many writers, many people who, you know, musicians, and all of these people, especially what you do with your mind, is best done during this time, because the mind is more calm, the mind is more receptive for such activities, and spiritually speaking, that is the time of the day which has the attribute of this sattvic nature, right? So at that time, that's why it's said that it's so important to do these things early in the morning. And in fact, Swami would tell us so many times, because as I said, we have in the hostel, we have Suprabhatam around 5:15 or 5:30, depending on which part of the year it is. And Swami would say that you don't wake up too early. Some people believe that you have to wake up at 3 in the morning, and, you know, spiritual aspirants should wake up at 2 and 3. Swami would say, don't do all of that. You need good sleep also. So sleep well, wake up at 4, not any earlier than that. And Swami would say, freshen up, just wash your face, come and sit. Even 1 hour, 1 hour, 15 minutes, if you can get, that would help you a lot. Swami would emphasize this so much. So this is something which Swami would tell many, many times. So the early morning time is certainly very, very important for these kind of activities, and that's why Suprabhatam is something which by default I think we do it in that time, because it's Suprabhatam, because it's an early morning prayer, we do it at that time, right? Now, let's speak a little specifically about spiritual practice, right? Because if you're talking about spiritual progress, when you're talking about being a spiritual aspirant, Then this morning time between 4 to 6, because it's a sattvic time, when you talk of spiritual aspiration, you're thinking about tilting your life more towards the sattvic aspects, or you're having a sattvic goal as your destination. So it becomes more and more important to use this morning time of between 4 to 8. In fact, it's a very, very important time for a spiritual aspirant. And we all know one devotee of Swami who spent many, many years in Swami's service, Mr. Raja Reddy. And many times we had this opportunity to go and meet him. When we were students, he used to come and he used to stay in East Prashanti, and sometimes some of my friends have gone and met him. So we all know that apart from being a person who was very close to Swami, who had the opportunity to stay in Swami's room and serve, he was a very, very strong spiritual aspirant, a very sincere spiritual aspirant. Even when he was spending time in Swami's presence, he would be very particular about his sadhana of morning meditation and his pranayama and yoga and all of that. And in fact, he was known for that. He was known for that steadfastness that he showed in the spiritual path. So when one of my friends went and met him, the first question that he would invariably ask is, what time in the morning do you wake up? And he would say that by 6 in the morning, half a day is over for a spiritual aspirant. This is what he would say. By 6 in the morning, half a day is over for a spiritual aspirant. So if you're keen on spirituality and if you wake up after that, you have only half a day to deal with as for your spiritual practice. That's what he would say. That's how important that morning time of, course he would say from morning 3 to 6, and Swami says waking up at 4 is good enough, but whatever it is, however you would like to look at it. So he would say that it's so important that if you wake up after 6, half the day of a spiritual aspirant is over. Now, coming to what Swami himself has said, and I think this is a very, very beautiful example which Swami gives to drive home the importance of this early morning time. And Swami would say that the prayer that you do early in the morning, whatever it is, you know, Suprabhatam or Japam or Dhyanam or Nagar Sankirtan, whatever you do in that early morning time, Swami would say it is like the money that you put in fixed deposit. And the money that you put in fixed deposit cannot be withdrawn every day. That is a long-term deposit, right? So Swami would say that all the good that you do early in the morning in the form of your spiritual practice goes into this fixed deposit account. And Swami said, I will not touch it when you have emergencies or needs. The prayer that you do during the day, all through the day, whatever you do, participating in bhajans or seva or the japam that you do, or the constant namasmarana that you do, Swami said that goes into the current deposit or the savings account, right? So Swami said when you have a need, when you have a day-to-day need, when you have an emergency, when you're in trouble and you call out to Swami, Swami said, I will only take money from the current deposit or the savings account. I will not touch the fixed deposit. And Swami explained, because what is there in the fixed deposit is meant for the overall spiritual progress of the individual. So Swami said, so if you want to progress spiritually, it is very important to do this fixed deposit. Otherwise this, you know, the savings account, Swami said, this is not going to help you much in your spiritual progress. So if you're a spiritual aspirant, if you're keen on making this progress, any prayer that you do early in the morning, any form of worship that you do early in the morning, goes into this fixed deposit, as Swami so beautifully explained, and this will be used for your overall spiritual progress. In fact, this again, Swami would say many times, that the spiritual progress, and Swami would relate it to the karmic balance. Swami said that you will have to work it out some way or the other, and unless you work it out, unless you finish everything, you are not going to attain that liberation. And when speaking about this, Swami would emphasize this early morning prayer, because the early morning prayer adds up to this fixed deposit, which has the ability to, you know, sublimate loads and loads of karma that we carry forward. So especially if you want to move to the next level spiritually as spiritual aspirants, Swami would say the early morning prayer is very, very important. So many, many people say that, you know, we are Swami's devotees for so many years, we've been doing bhajans. What is it that we have to do? I mean, I want to become more sincere in my spiritual journey. What should it be that we should do? I think this is the answer for that. do something early in the morning, some form of prayer, some form of meditation, some form of japam. In fact, I recall one Swami told in a discourse that when you do participating in one Nagar Sankirtan, again, Nagar Sankirtan is something which we do in that time of the day between 4 to 8. So Swami said participating in one Nagar Sankirtan is equivalent to sitting through many, many sessions of regular bhajans. Because one thing is, you're doing it early in the morning, and when you sing aloud, there are many other people who are getting to listen to the name of the Lord early in the morning. So Swami said the benefit that you get participating in Nagar Sankirtan is much, much more than even participating in a regular bhajans. That is the value of doing anything spiritual, anything as a spiritual sadhana early in the morning, especially if one is a spiritual aspirant. So that's something which you can always keep in mind. Now, probably before I conclude, I'll just say what is the necessity for Suprabhatam or Ashtotram, right? When I spoke about the three types of karma last week, I spoke about karma, vikarma and akarma, where I said there are many activities and every activity has a consequence. But that activity which is backed by emotions, which are backed by emotions and feelings, and our mind completely involved, those actions become karmas or become actions which have heavy consequences or very, very pointed consequences. So in that sense, you know, we could get up in the morning and do japam and dhyanam and we can do any of these things. But the whole idea is, what is the emotion that is backing it? So when we are, as Swami's devotees, wanting to do something like this, and for most of us, spiritual progress is nothing but moving closer to Swami. We don't think of it meaning anything like we getting any powers or anything like that. We only think of it as moving closer to Swami. Like the quote I read before, we only think of the final merger also as a state where the devotee and the Lord are inseparable, right? So when we think of that, the practice, when it is backed by that emotion, when it is backed by that feeling of love for Swami, I think that sadhana that we do also becomes so much more useful, so much more valuable. So it is easier if the prayer that we do makes us connect to Swami, and when I say Swami, the Swami in this form, God in this form, as we have come to love. It becomes more and more valuable if the prayer that we do is focused on this form, right? And that is why, in fact, even if you're going to get up and, if I get up and listen to Venkateshwara Suprabhatam early in the morning, I'm going to be thinking only of Swami. So it becomes even more easier when you chant the Suprabhatam or the Ashtotram for that matter, where it is easier to think of Swami, and when we think of Swami, it is easier to back that action of sadhana with the right emotion of devotion. That is what is actually going to give us the real benefit. So that is why these are very, very important. And of course, the name itself is important too. In fact, early, as I was speaking about the Pathamandiram days, Swami would come and tell some of these devotees who considered themselves spiritual aspirants staying in an ashram, Swami would tell them that you wake up and you chant the Panchakshari, you say Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, but you don't seem to realize how valuable this name that I have come with is. You take it that, you know, those names are more potent than this name of Sai. So Swami would tell them that, you know, this name is very, very powerful. It has the ability to take you to the highest. So the name itself is special too. I'm not denying that. Because after thousands and thousands of years, when God comes in a human form, He chooses a name. That name has to be significant. There must be great potency in that name. But apart from that, it is more easier for us to connect when what we chant is related to Swami. In fact, that is what Swami would tell some of these people whom Swami had guided to do japam. Swami would tell them, don't take long shlokas and keep repeating it. There are more chances of you getting lost. You will forget the lyrics or your mind will go elsewhere. Just sit and do Om Shri Sai Ram, Om Shri Sai Ram. That is good enough, because that has every potency that you're looking for. That has everything that you as a spiritual aspirant needs. But when it is some activity which helps us focus more on Swami, I think the ability to get the maximum out of that prayer also results. So why do we do early morning prayer? Because that is the best time to do. And the other reason is, Swami has clearly said that the prayer is done early in the morning. Swami keeps it aside for spiritual progress. Literally, Swami said that, I'm not going to use it for your worldly needs. I will not take it when you're having a health problem or you're having a financial problem. Swami will say, I will use the work that you're doing during the day for that. And that also explains why that is also equally important. It doesn't mean that we can wind up our spiritual activities by 8 in the morning. We need to do that throughout the day too. But Swami clearly said that what is done before 8 is kept aside for one's spiritual progress. Why Suprabhatam? Why Ashtotram? And why all of these things? It is because it is easier for us to connect and emotionally do some of these activities when it is related to Swami. And that is why in all His mercy, Swami has given us these shlokas and mantras which is centered around Him that we can do. But if there's any other way you can feel connected to Swami, if there's any other chanting that if you do and you can feel connected to Swami, I think that should be fine, definitely fine, if you can connect to Swami that way. So this is important, and this is what I thought I'll leave with. Maybe before I conclude, I'll just add one more point, which may be useful for people who want to wake up in the morning and start practicing these things. This is something which Swami spoke about to the students again, but this was as part of the discourses that Swami gave to the management students. There Swami very beautifully explains the number of hours one person needs depending on which age bracket that one belongs to. So I'm just going to read out this so that if you're looking at planning your schedule, you can see where you fit into this and accordingly you can plan. Because Swami said to get the right amount of sleep is also equally important. You cannot overlook that. And you cannot completely deny yourself of sleep. So when you're planning your early morning activity, ensure that you get this much sleep and then go ahead. So I'll just read out what Swami has said to the students. Swami said that sleep is closely linked to age. And Swami went on to say that infants need 22 hours of sleep. That's what Swami says. 22 hours of sleep. And they only wake up to eat and, you know, probably to play for a while and have bath. For children between the age of 5 and 12, 10 hours of sleep is very, very important. So if you are a parent and if you have children of this age and if you want to get them into a schedule, ensure that you do this. Between the age of 5 to 12, they need 10 hours of sleep. So you plan the schedule accordingly. And then Swami went on to say that those who are between the ages of 12 to 32, so for 20 years, 12 to 32, they require a minimum of 7 to 8 hours of sleep. So look at your schedule and see that you have given yourself 7 to 8 hours at least, and then you plan. But this is the interesting part. This was interesting to me because I didn't know this before. Swami says that those who are between the age of 35 to 50, they can manage with 5 hours of sleep. So if you are in this bracket, you can be a little more adventurous with your early morning schedule. You can sleep a little lesser. Swami says even 5 hours of sleep is enough between this age of 35 to 50. So I hope that will help you to decide what time you need to wake up and which is the best schedule that will be suitable for you. So that's the answer I wanted to give Sister Prashanthi. I hope that gave you some points that you can pick up and start using. Thank you for the question, and on behalf of all of you, thanks to Swami for making everything that we need so clear that we don't need to look elsewhere. We just need to look into Swami's message, and of course we need to look a little deeply and deeper with every passing day. Thanks to the questioner for the question, and thanks to Swami for the beautiful wisdom that He's given all of us. So with that, dear listeners, it's time for me to say Sairam and wrap up this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. If you have a question on practical spirituality or practical aspects of your life and wondering what is Swami's spiritual solution for that, you can send it to me. We will explore the answers together. You can send it to my mail ID, that's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. Like Sister Prashanthi, if you can record your own question in your voice and send it across, I think that would be wonderful. It's always wonderful to play the question in the questioner's voice. If you wish to be anonymous, do let me know. I will not mention your name. The mails that you send to me will be read only by me, so confidentiality is guaranteed. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. I'm going to leave you with a beautiful, beautiful, nostalgic old song. We're talking about Chitravati, and every time we think of Chitravati, this is the song which comes to mind. And even as you listen to the song, I think you can just picturize Swami standing on the banks of Chitravati, and the devotees of olden years, the 50s and 40s, they would say that even as they were coming in the bullock carts, Swami would be standing in the sands of the banks of Chitravati waiting to welcome them. And so was the case when they were leaving too. Even as they would, you know, go away into the horizon, they would see Swami standing at the banks of Chitravati, holding a handkerchief and waving them goodbye and promising them that he will call them very soon. I think when we listen to the song, that is a beautiful scene that comes in the mind. The sylvan settings of old Puttaparthi, the flowing river, the unbelievably and in a very special way beautiful Patamandir, and this most enchanting Swami standing in front of it and waving this handkerchief. I'm going to leave you with this song. The other side of it, the rest of the programs will continue. I'll be back here at 12:30 to join you again for the afternoon satsang. But I'll meet you all again next week, 11 a.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai, Answering Booth.
Chitravati tira చిత్రూపవా